sont inconscients. Ils n'ont changé.
Hell is most awkward.
It's got to be perfect. It's got to be worth it. Yeah. Too many people take second best, but I won't take anything less. It's got to be, yeah.
Fred, hello.
Hello, Tim. You will hear the dog in the background, perhaps. And that's because we have baboons in the garden on the balcony, and they drive the dog insane because it's her territory and it's nothing for those baboons. Okay. But they're separate from each other, thank God. So there's a glass wall between them, so there won't be any blood, but there will be noise.
That's very exotic, Fred.
Very exotic. This is South Africa for you, man.
It's wild animals everywhere.
Yeah, tourists love them.
Yeah. It's not even the humans. Just a little joke there. Yeah. It's just the two of us today. We have, I think, the most confusingly designed challenge in front of us. Do you want to tell people again what the challenge is, and then I'll contradict you with a different version?
Yes, and you'll quickly look for songs that fit the challenge because you chose the wrong ones.
Exactly.
Now, let me give you a bit of background. So I'm not a music evangelist. I don't push my musical taste upon people. I always think, well, sometimes I say, oh, this is a really good band, I should listen to them, but that's where it stops usually. And so, because I got friends who make playlists and put them on Spotify and put them on Instagram and say, you must hear this. And often I listen to that and I think, wow, yeah, it's interesting. Or I think, nah, it's not my thing. But I don't have that gen, so it's not my thing. But I have several bands that I think everybody should hear. And I sometimes do try to push those on other people. But I was very wary about it because you do it with people that you care about. And if they don't get it, if they don't like what you just told them, it might infect the friendship or the mutual appreciation society. So I hardly ever do it. But I did it the other day with someone, and there was a band I thought she would love. So I made a beautiful playlist of 30 songs and sent it. And all that happened was silence and more silence. And then I said, did you hear the playlist? Did you get it? And then she wrote back, yes, I'm afraid it didn't do much for me. So that's then you swallow and you think, okay, that's a wasted opportunity. It's one step forward, two steps back in a friendship, that kind of comment. So I thought it would be a nice challenge for us, because I'm sure everybody has those bands that they think are fabulous and you want other people to hear, or other people have been dismissive of them. So I've chosen three, and I think you've chosen three. And of each one, we've chosen one song that we think should pull people over and go on their knees and say, we worship you, we worship you. We're not worthy. So that was the challenge today.
Okay. So my version of the challenge is, that's all very interesting, but my version of the challenge is not so much people that I think are great necessarily, but people who I think generally out there are underestimated or not known, or their greatness is not appreciated. The advantage here is it won't hurt my feelings if you say, yeah, exactly. Actually, I don't like this band. But you might think, well, maybe they deserve a second listen. You know, and as always, my choices are extremely conventional and yours are slightly unconventional. I wouldn't say sort of crazy. But you'll hear when we get to them, all of my songs, I think people have probably heard before. But I'll try and explain why it is that I think they're great songs and why they actually elevate the band unexpectedly. Is that okay with you?
That's a perfect interpretation.
Okay. But let's start off with just what we've been listening to and thinking about over the past week. Here's a song of a band you said you've been listening to. Let's take a listen.
She was dying in vain. She was dying in vain. She was dying in vain.
actually like it.
Yeah, very much. I think it's brilliant.
It's a band called Clientele, and I had never heard of them. And in South Africa, our postal services don't work so well. And I still subscribe to The Wire, the music magazine, The Wire. And I get it from England. So you get it about 6 weeks, 2 months later than it came out. So not so long ago, I got The Wire that was for January and February. And it's the 2023 Rewind. So they have all the best albums of the year and people's personal choices, etc. And on number 17 of the top 50 of their, they're usually very avant-garde. They've, out of the first 10, I know maybe three by name, let alone the music. And then number 17 was a band called The Clientele, and the album's called I'm Not There Anymore. And so I read about it. It said London indie stalwarts, The Clientele's seventh album, fused 90s chamber pop with fingerstyle guitar and shuffling drum loops. Alasdair MacLean's enchanting melodies and surrealist influenced lyrics pointed towards an expansive artistic vision that goes far beyond the narrow preoccupations of much indie. And then they compare them to Love, the band Love from the 60s, Donovan, Chris Bell, who was a bit big star. And I thought, let me listen to that. Sounds interesting. So I listened to it and I was sold. And now the happy thing about that is, this is their seventh album. So I have six other albums to still listen to. Sometimes you make those discoveries and you think, wow, a whole new vision opens up for me and I can lose myself in The Clientele.
Yeah, so there you've got a treat waiting for you. Yeah, that's
interesting. Exactly.
Also, one of the things that I've been listening to over the last week or so is because I so enjoyed our sort of discussion with Mark Rosen last week. And as we mentioned, he does this thing called the Friday Song. And it's a bit of a tradition now to just play play the song that he chooses. Some of them are very well, some of them are very unusual. So he chose a band called Belarouche, and the song is called Anything You Want, But Not That, which is such a nice title. Anyway, this is the song. Anyway, the sad thing is that they have now broken up. They are a three-piece electronic soul band, which I think is such a, it's like both historic, but also very modern. The whole feel of it has a bit of a 60s swing. Anyway, great.
And in the 90s, there was, I think it was in the 90s, when you had that sort of jazz influence on dance music. It reminds me a bit of that as well. That sort of swing, because it has a jazzy swing. It's beyond soul. Right?
Yes.
And that voice as well. She's got a beautiful voice.
That's lovely. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Good choice.
All right. Let's get into it. So now let me play your first song and you can tell us why it shows that they're just the greatest. Okay, the Triffids, the Wide Open Road. I know them a little bit, but I mean, it's a great song, isn't it? I love the drums. I love the da. Very melodic. And I think you've played them for me before, somewhere along the line.
I do try to convert people to the church.
Yes, influence them.
Subliminally. I tried it with my partner, and she absolutely hates them. She can't stand them. She can't stand... What? She likes the melodies. She can't stand the man's voice. Right. And there's some lyrics that make her feel nauseous. You know, there's another song where he sings about it's too hot to move and too hot to think. This is they're an Australian band from Perth, and Perth gets hot. And he sings about that. They sing about Australia a lot. And so there's dirty dishes in the kitchen sink. And the thought of that heat and those dirty dishes in the kitchen sink makes her feel queasy. And so she, I can't. Sometimes I try and throw a little song in somewhere, but it's, is that the Australians? Turn it off. So there you are. And I absolutely love them. I've got every album they ever made. And I think I love the voice. I think his lyrics are incredibly good. I like their music. I like his attitude. He started out, I think they started out as a four-piece. So he and his brother, both on guitar and a drummer and a bassist. The bassist who now plays for Nick Cave in the Bad Seeds, by the way. And then he got this young woman on keyboards who never played keyboards in her life. And he said, I want you to play keyboards. So she said, I've never played. She says, that's what I want. You play keyboards and you start from scratch. So they didn't bring in two big outside influences. So he could need them to his needs. And then they got a sixth member who played lap steel guitar. And the guy said, I can play guitar and I can play whatever, but mandolin, whatever. But I've never played lap steel guitar. He said, that's exactly what I want. I want somebody who's got no experience in it. So you don't get those country lick cliches and stuff. So it's beautifully done. And I tried to convince this friend now the other day with a 30 Triffids playlist, which we'll put on our Facebook so people can judge by themselves. And it was all in vain. But maybe this podcast will convert more people. I know five people in South Africa, the whole of South Africa, who like the Triffids.
Right.
Okay. We form a little cult.
Yeah, I think they're fantastic. I think the mixture of the lyricism and the funness of the lyrics, and it's a heady.
He starts the second verse, I think, is I lost track of my friends. I lost my kin. I cut them off as limbs. I drove out over the flatland hunting down you and him. So it's almost like a murder ballad. And then there's another bit where he goes, so how do you think it feels when sleeping by yourself, when the one you love is with someone else? So that's, he talks about you, which is he himself there. And it's a sad song because he doesn't get the girl. And the man himself, David McComb, he had a heart issue as a kid. And later he self-medicated, or whatever you want to call it, with alcohol and drugs. And then at some stage he needed a heart
transplant. That always works.
It always works, especially after a heart transplant. It's a very good thing to continue doing. So then 3 years after the transplant, he died, the age of 36. And apparently they found residues of heroin in his blood. So his heart gave up. And he has all these songs where he sings, you can die of a broken heart. And you think, that's quite ironic. He actually did die of a broken heart, literally. So, this is sad. He was a brilliant songwriter. Brilliant.
Yes.
There we are. Sad.
Cool.
What's yours?
Okay, so this is a Carole King song. So Carole King, I think she's acknowledged as a great songwriter. I don't think that's the problem with her. But some people like listening to her, but she doesn't have a fantastic voice. And she's singing these fantastically technical songs. Everybody you can think of has sung a Carole King song and turned it into a hit right across the board. But when she sings the songs herself, she had one fantastically popular record called Tapestry in the early 70s. But really, we haven't heard a lot of from her. We don't think that we have, but she's wrote songs for 20 years for different people. And they are so technically astute and sharp. And you can hear it a little bit in this passage of this song, which I think she does actually sing very well. And there's another reason why I think it's a great song that should convert you to Carole King, hopefully. The other reason why I think this is such a great song is the first song I know of that talks about a female orgasm. It could be something else,
never,
you know.
I never thought of that. Just
yes, people don't.
But she used to be with another songwriter, right? Goffin.
Yes, that's right. She wasn't a great lyricist. So she often paired up with lyricists, and she wrote the music. But she did write lyrics eventually on her own, and she was always involved in the kind of lyric writing. But anyway, I think it's a very old song, but it's special. Anyway.
I like the halfway. Suddenly there's a different, it's got that sort of pumping swing kind of thing. And then it turns suddenly a bit jazzy and then goes back into that same
pumping. Yes, and that... Yeah, and that was her skill, because she had these, she was very incredibly imaginative with the way that she dealt with melody and the way that moved the chords around. And they're very smooth. They feel very natural, but they are extraordinarily unusual, especially for...
Did she also write songs. You've Got a Friend? Was that hers?
Yeah, because You've Got a Friend was a hit for James Taylor, her boyfriend, for a bit. But Flack... And Donny Hathaway.
Oh, yeah, a natural woman she had as well, huh?
Correct, exactly.
With Aretha Franklin.
Exactly. Barbara Streisand, Linda Ronstadt, Martika.
One of the first LPs I bought as a teenager was the first solo album by Nils Lofgren, who now plays guitar with Bruce Springsteen. And one of the songs on it was called I'm Going Back. And I really liked it. It also had a driving piano thing. And then I looked, and it was actually written by Carole King, who I thought was utterly uncool at the time, of course, because
those were the
days of long hair and hard rock. And I didn't buy Tapestry till much later. But then I thought, wow, it's a beautiful song. It's about growing old and feeling quite melancholic about it, which fits people our age.
Okay. All right, let's move on. This is your next choice. Never flee, comes a regular, call out your name. Yes, I hear, comes a regular, am I the only one who feels the shame?
Do you remember we used to try this song ourselves?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
When we still
the replacements,
music.
Here comes the regular. Yeah. So why does this particular song change your mind, hopefully?
They started out as a sort of trashy punk band from Minneapolis, but they played very fast and had like tunes like Dope Smoking Moron, and who was it? Somebody's Got a Boner, and very juvenile stuff. But they were more a rock and roll band than a punk band. You could hear they had melody, and I think he has a great voice. Slightly raspy, not too raspy, not like Bruce Springsteen territory, but there's a slight edge to it, a bit like Kurt Cobain of Nirvana had. And after two albums of like trash punk, they started incorporating different influences. So there was suddenly you heard a bit of country, you heard the old ballad, and then they were this was mid 80s somewhere, college radio. So they were big on college radio together with REM and Husker Du and the Meat Puppets. There was alternative rock, and they always nearly made it, but they always made sure that when there was a chance for them of making it, they would shoot themselves in every foot they had, like four band members, 8 feet, they would shoot in all of them. They had to do this gig for all the A&R people, I think in New York. They all came because they were with a small label and they wanted to be signed to a big label. So they all came, and the Replacements got incredibly drunk before the gig. And of course, it was shambles. It was utter chaos. And I don't know how they did get signed in the end, but there was a record label, a major record label that signed them. And in 1985, it was Sire Records. They released this LP. So this was the first major record LP. It's called Tim, T-I-M, a bit like somebody I know very well. And it was also the last LP they made with their solo guitarist, Bob Stinson, who turned into a complete alcoholic and drug addict and died not that long later. That you'll see there's a theme in my three choices. Band members dying. And the next year, they were on Saturday Night Live, which was their biggest breakthrough, could have been. And they performed two songs from this Tim album. But the band's behavior on the show, which was drinking and swearing, basically, resulted in a lifetime ban from Saturday Night Live. So there you are. That was the replacements, the ones who could have been bigger than the Beatles, but never were. Right. And I've always played ramshackle rock and roll in the tradition of somewhere between the Sex Pistols and the Faces and the Rolling Stones. And they got great lyrics. Here he sings, "You're like a picture on the fridge that's never been stocked with food." I think that's brilliant. They got that loser mentality. And here comes a regular. The guy, after a hard day of nothing much at all, he starts drinking because it's a good time to drink. That's their attitude. Right. And I just hope people will get the replacements. I feel like preaching now.
The thing about this challenge or this formula. For some reason, I love sort of shamble rock. There's a thing called mumble rap. And I've always wondered why there wasn't a thing called mumble rock. Like people singing from their heart, just getting out there and saying their bit, not in a overly clever kind of way, but lots of genuine feelings. It's cool.
But I'm sure there's in the indie scene, you'll find lots of mumble rock bands that never made it.
Mumble rock
never became a big thing.
No, exactly. But you know, happy hard beat rock, something you wouldn't call folk.
Yeah, I love that. It's slightly off always. Okay, and yours?
All right. So now this is dedicated entirely to you, because you're Dutch, and this song is called Amsterdam, and you'll probably recognize it.
Come on, oh, my star is fading, and I see no chance of release. And I I'm dead on the surface, but I'm screaming underneath. And time is on your side, it's on your side now. I'm pushing you down and all around. No, it's no
right, so this is a Coldplay, obviously. Why the song is called Amsterdam, I have no idea. Amsterdam doesn't feature in the lyrics. But it was off the second album.
To see.
Yeah, it was off the second Coldplay album.
Can I tell you why it's called Amsterdam?
Oh, please, go ahead.
Unrelated to the lyrics, Chris Martin simply wrote the verse and chorus parts in Amsterdam before finishing the outro of the song in Iceland. Martin told Billboard magazine in 2002 that was probably the song that took us the longest time to write, although it's actually the simplest song. There you are. It's not a happy song, eh?
No. I think what happened to Coldplay is that they brought out the first three albums, which were absolutely fantastic, and they are totally at home in the genre of ballads. And they write just these absolutely fantastically beautiful ballads. But then they started playing bigger and bigger concerts. And they didn't have any song really to get people on their feet and happy because they're a ballad band. So they came under enormous pressure to upbeat their songs, to sing about more positive things, to be less introspective, to be more modern in kind of style. And they did all of that very successfully. But the reason for the reassessment, in my humble view, is that actually, if you listen to what they should have been, not what they have become, then you have a kind of different perspective. Amsterdam was just one track of this album, but every single song is just a sort of a kind of masterpiece of songwriting brilliance. And I think it's a terrible pity that they're now doing, they have to in a way, they're playing stadiums, and you can't hold a stadium without something with a thump.
You need something pompous. But anyway, I'm not keen on Coldplay, I must say. I did the first album when it came out, but yeah. I always thought it was like Radiohead light. They lacked the experimentation and that high voice that Thom Yorke also has. But then I noticed there's one album that Brian Eno produced for them. So then I did have to get that album, because I'm a huge Brian Eno fan. And I thought, if Brian likes them, there must be something to them, at least. Let me see. I forgot which album it was.
Wasn't it the La Vida album?
Yeah, La Vida, that's right. And yeah, he also has in that other one with, I think, X and Y, there's some of his influences in that. I don't know, as a co-writer or... And actually, I quite like that X and Y better than La Vida, to be honest. But of course, it might be Milo Xyloto, I don't know, one of the two. But of course, he's got an incredible taste, Brian Eno, but he's also been involved with bands like James, for instance, that I don't particularly like. and there was also U2. He made them big, it must be said. But anyway, so then I collect Brian Eno things, so... In my Brian Eno collection is a Coldplay album. So there you are.
Okay. And obviously the Amsterdam part, you relate to that with great affection.
I used to collect songs that had Rotterdam in the title. No, there are quite a few Amsterdam songs. There was that Jacques Brel song in the Port of Amsterdam that David Bowie also covered. And Amsterdam features quite a lot. Rotterdam, hardly ever. So for me, it didn't even have to be in the song title. As long as it was somewhere in the lyrics, it was fine. But okay. I only know two of them.
People from Rotterdam just love people from Amsterdam. Isn't that true?
And the football clubs especially.
They are great friends with each other.
I won't go into that now. But I used to really enjoy Amsterdam. But it's lost some of its magic because of mass tourism, I think.
Okay.
And coming from Rotterdam, you would find Amsterdam people quite arrogant. And even though none of them was really actually born and bred in Amsterdam, they were all students who studied there and then got stuck there. But these days, it's mainly English that you hear on the streets. So even Amsterdamers don't like the city anymore.
All right. This is your last song.
Empty on the day when they made it, but heaven needed some place to throw all the shit. Human hearts and pain should never be separate. They wouldn't tear themselves apart, both trying to fit.
Did you know this one?
Completely new band to me, and it's excellent, just fabulous.
Yeah, they were very good. The Magnolia Electric Company, they were called, and this The Dark Don't Hide It. Another tragic story. The singer died from alcohol abuse at the age of 39. So we got the dead singer of the Triffids, the dead singer of Magnolia, and the dead guitarist of the Replacements. So maybe that's a bit of a theme in my story. But I didn't know them either. Somebody once gave us, those were the days when you burned CDs and copied them and gave them to friends. And somebody gave this album, it's called Trials and Errors, to my partner. We were on our way on the road somewhere, we played it. And initially I thought it was a bit derivative. You think, okay, sounds like Neil Young and the Crazy Horse and that sort of music. But it was one of those, and we put up something else. And later I thought, I'd like to hear that again, because I thought it was really good. And so you play it again and again, and you think, wow, it's actually quite an amazing band. And it's a bit like I had with the clientele. Suddenly there's this whole backlog that you can still discover. And also his previous band, which was called Songs Ohio, which sounds more or less the same as this Magnolia. So there was like, I don't know, 10 or something albums I could listen to and wallow in. And not many people have heard it. And so I thought they deserve another push, even though they are tragic. And these songs are sad. They're like, every song is sad. This one, The Dark Don't Hide It. What does he sing in it again? It's about pain and human suffering and heaven needed some place to throw all the shit. Human hearts and pain should never be separate. They wouldn't tear themselves apart, both trying to fit. So there you are. It's about, that's what the songs are about. Human hearts and pain. And funny how we chose sad songs of bands to even The Replacements. It's a bit of a...
Yeah.
Maybe they were better to convince people.
I think it's about depth, isn't it? You feel the sad song that bands write are the least appreciated because they tend to get the least airplay. And
And also if people get the sad song, then they're pulled over that barricade.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Because if they go for the swinging, then you think, but that's easy. You need to appreciate the sad song. That's when you're a true fan.
Yes. And if you listen to a lot of a band, you're drawn in by the happy song, but then you trip over the sad song. You suddenly realize, oh my God, that's very good. Doesn't apply, of course, to the Carole King situation.
No, but if you had chosen You've Got a Friend, that would have been, that would have done the job.
That's true, which was a big hit, of course.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so this is my last choice. So now, this is a Billy Joel song. There's so many things that are irritating about Billy Joel. He was absolutely panned by critics when he was at his peak in the 70s. Nobody particularly liked him. He came head-to-head against punk, and the punks thought that he was just awful, sanctimonious, self-serving, over-technical, not a great sort of delivery. As the piano man, he was always subservient in some senses to the other piano player, Elton John. I understand all of that stuff. And he was so hounded that he eventually stopped bringing out albums. And there was one very interesting, or very amusing interaction between Elton John and Billy Joel. And Elton John said, God, Billy, you were so good. Why don't you write some more songs? You should write more songs. And Billy Joel said to Elton John, Elton, I think you should have written less.
Were his songs ever covered by other people?
No, I don't think so.
Not.
There was that one, We Didn't Start the Fire. But the thing that you don't realize about Billy Joel is until you try and play one of his songs is how incredibly smart they are technically. This song, it moves through complicated chords and he puts it together in this fantastically beautiful way. A good thermometer for me was my wife, who really doesn't like Billy Joel. And then I played her the song and she said, oh my God, that's good. Anyway, let's
have this.
Before you burn it out, you got so much to do and only so many hours in a day. But you know that when the truth is told, that you can get what you want or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway through. Ooh, when will you realize Vienna waits for you?
The lyrics are a little bit obscure, but apparently they are based on something that his father said to him. His father was also a musician and was a working musician. and always wanted to retire in Vienna. And really, this song was a kind of tribute to his father and a reminder to himself that there will always be a time when you won't be under pressure. You'll just be playing music in a fabulous place. And Vienna was a kind of concept. But anyway, Billy Joel is having a little bit of a sort of comeback. He's always played one concert a year in New York. They've always been complete, absolute sellouts. And he's just brought out a new album.
Yeah, I saw there was a big piece about him in the New Yorker called 33 Albums by Billy Joel or something. I haven't read it yet, but I did save it. And I thought, because I don't care about Billy Joel one bit, as you probably would have guessed. But I basically only knew The Piano Man, to be honest, which I thought was a god-awful song. And it did remind me of Elton John. I don't mind Elton John because he's got that English quirkiness, those platform boots, and he had that incredible drug habit, and he was mad.
And that's always
whereas
good.
Billy Joel didn't so strike me as, and also the covers of the albums, you come across them every now and then. There's one where he throws a brick through a window, and I thought, oh. But I looked up covers, and at least 30. Beyoncé covered Honesty, Diana Krall covered Just the Way You Are, Joan Baez covered Goodnight Saigon, even Ladysmith's Black Mambazo, River of Dreams, etc. Sheena Easton, Garth Brooks, Westlife, Dolly Parton, Helen Reddy. So he's not that sadly uncovered. He does make some income from the cover.
Were any of the covers the definitive version? I don't think so.
Well, I don't know. I haven't heard any of the covers.
It does speak to the respect that other artists have for him in the same way that it does for Carole King.
Yeah, you chose songwriters and Coldplay.
All right, so how do we sort this out? It's very difficult. I don't know. Jesus.
But initially, my idea was we each pick one band that we think is, or artist, who's completely undeservedly not discovered. And then we each pick one song from each of our lists. So we would have two songs. But here, why don't I pick one from your list and you pick one from my list and we go back with two songs?
Okay.
Because you can't rank them.
Yes, no, exactly. I would go for the Triffids.
I would go for Carole King. That solves that problem. I would never go for
Carole King. Just the relief that we're not going to choose Coldplay or Billy Joel should. And I think legitimately you can say that Carole King does need to be more on a pedestal than she is.
Yeah, and I think she is an incredible songwriter. Yeah, her songs are known by other people, whereas Billy Joel's songs, I never heard any of those cover versions. So
I think in terms
of songwriting, and she's also very low-key as a solo artist, as you pointed out. She made a couple of albums, quite a few, I think, but they never reached the same status as her songs did.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's a good choice.
Right. Okay.
And of course, I go with the Triffids because they are my favorite band, one of my top three ever. So that's perfect.
Do you think my choice of your three was also right?
Yeah.
Okay. You would have chosen the Triffids.
Also, because I think if you play Magnolia, for instance, to people, nobody will really object to it. The Replacements, apart from the slow songs, they might find a bit too punky or too ramshackle.
Yes,
but the Triffids cause like almost disgust from some people, which I just don't understand. So I think they deserve much more than they have at the moment.
Okay. All right.
Which I may add that I spoke with four of the members when I was in Australia. And they were all delightful people. Sometimes there's a saying you should never speak to your heroes. But in this case, the guy had died, obviously, the main man. But the other
so
four
you didn't
were...
talk to him?
No. I sometimes in my dreams I speak to him.
Okay. All righty. So next week we have an interesting person and an interesting topic, we think, right? So we're going to be joined by a poet next week. And
award-winning poet, may I add.
Okay. And then the challenge, how would you phrase the challenge?
He must come up with a challenge, but I asked him to think of something that combines poetry with songs. My idea was, which songs should we listen to get a good idea of poetry and pop music, for instance? But okay. We have to wait and see what he comes up with.
Okay. It will be interesting anyway. Cool. Well, thanks, Fred. That was
thank
fun.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay.
See you next week. And subscribe and go to
yes.
our Facebook,
subscribe
Instagram.
And like it. And we also have a Patreon if you feel like contributing, which would be very useful because we'll spend it all on trying to market this podcast a little bit more and get interesting people to join us on it. And all of those details will be in the write-up below or above or next to this thing. Cool. Just concentrate for a moment on
the wide open road.